Good morning. So when Dana called me, I was pretty sure she forgot who I was. But she seems to remember me, so here we are. So we've all heard, and maybe even said, that someone is beautiful on the inside and outside. So it's not just a platitude or a nice thing to say someone's beautiful inside and out. We mean something by it. But what do we mean? Oftentimes, it has to do with their character and how they treat others or make others feel. So today is all about biblical beauty and what that entails. So let's start with talking about inner beauty that comes from God and what that means. So we've all been to classes and read books detailing what the Proverbs 31 woman did and how we can be more like her. She's our ideal and who we strive to be. But notice that in her description, we read nothing of her appearance. We don't know the color of her hair or eyes, her skin tone, her waist size, or anything like that. Her clothing is mentioned as being fine linen and purple, but only after her family is being mentioned as being clothed in scarlet. So this makes me think that she did what every mom does and clothed her children before herself. Like when we go to the store to find something new for ourselves and walk out with new clothes for our kids instead. So she's also described as being clothed with strength and dignity, which are character traits, not actual clothes. So more is written about her character and how she treated others than anything about her looks. She was a hard worker, rising before others and going to sleep after them. Her husband is respected at the gate, and she helps him in earning that respect. Her family is taken care of. Her servants are also taken care of. She helps the needy with what they come to her asking for. She's industrious, making things to supply for her family. She's wise and kind to others. Her husband and children call her blessed and praise her. Her character is summed up in verse 30, so let's go ahead and read that. Charm is deceitful and beauty is vain, but a woman who fears the Lord, she shall be praised. She is to be praised for fearing the Lord. All her actions are motivated by her fear for the Lord, and that's what makes her stand apart. She's selfless when it comes, which comes from wanting to be more like the Lord she loves. That selflessness causes her to treat others the way she does. We can often feel like we don't measure up to the standard of a Proverbs 31 woman, especially when we start comparing ourselves to others on social media. Pictures of Pinterest-level parties or picturesque dinners on Facebook that were made from scratch can all make us feel inadequate. For example, I'm part of a recipe-sharing group on Facebook and see pictures of amazing dinners all the time while I'm shoving sandwiches into my kids' hands as I yell at them to get in the car because we're going to be late to soccer or softball or some other thing we have going on. So I think we all have Pinterest fails and mom fails and stories like that. So I'm just going to share with you about poor Chloe's fifth birthday. It was, you know, the big birthday that signals going to school and all these other big changes. And she didn't have a party. None of our kids did last year. It was too crazy for that. So I just tried to make her a cake, and it ended up being disastrous in my mind. It was on a day that I was watching Five Extra Kids, and Levi was only a month old, so finding the time to bake the cake was a challenge. But I found time and got it baked. Then, when I tried to get it out of the pan, it stuck badly and came out in pieces. And I thought, well, it's still okay. I'll just use frosting like spackle. We'll just piece it together. The kids will like the extra frosting anyway. It'll be fine. So I went to make frosting and realized I had no powdered sugar. And I'm pretty sure I was out of milk, too. So there was no way to make frosting. There was no way to fix it. The kids came in from playing outside and were excited about having cake since they'd been asking for it all morning. So we put it together as well as we could and put a candle in it. We sang to Chloe, and each kid got a chunk of cake. It felt like a disaster to me because it didn't look the greatest and it wasn't decorated cutely. But the kids didn't care. They kept saying it tasted so yummy and were excited to eat cake. We sometimes think things need to be perfect or Facebook post-worthy, when really what we can do is enough and makes our kids happy. We can feel often like we have fallen short of the Proverbs 31 woman, like I did that day with the cake, but it's valued by our families and by God. We have value in God's eyes even with our shortcomings. How many times have we felt that we are not enough, our cakes aren't good enough, we're not good enough, we're not pretty enough. So back in November, a friend shared this blog post, and the ideas presented really stuck with me, so much so that I remembered it when I was preparing for this, and wanted to share some of it with you. So I'll just read a portion of it now. I cried today because I didn't feel pretty. I tried to take a picture with Ben to post on Instagram, and it ended with me crying in our room with a mental list of things I wish were different about me. I overall don't feel this way about myself, but it does come in waves randomly. It's the all-too-familiar dance we all do with the adversary that we're so used to doing, we don't even step on his toes anymore. The dance that we aren't enough. We aren't pretty enough. We aren't skinny enough. We aren't good enough. And then I remember that it's the adversary that makes us feel inadequate. I remembered that when Satan gets me down, it's only because I allow him to. I remembered that light always overcomes dark if we make the effort to turn on the switch. I remembered that comfort and truth is always there because Christ is always there. And how God sees me is the only thing that matters. And he sees me as someone capable of becoming like him. Our perfect creator created us perfectly. You are good enough, and God does care. Love everyone, including yourself. Because when he thinks of you, he smiles. Because you are oh so beautiful in the eyes of God. So hopefully you can see why that stuck with me. But we often focus on little things we could do, we could be better, we think could be better or should be different, to the point that we don't see ourselves as others do. We believe the lies that Satan puts before us, that we aren't enough. We spend a lot of money on cosmetics that are supposedly going to help us look better. In 2016, $62.46 billion was spent on cosmetics. And in 2013, an InStyle magazine reported that the average woman spends $15,000 on beauty products over the course of her lifetime. I know they saw $13,000, so we found different numbers. But the cosmetic industry profits in telling us through commercials and advertisements that we need to change something about ourselves to be considered pretty. Buy this foundation to cover all your freckles and blemishes, while others are getting freckles tattooed on their faces because they don't have any. We always want what somebody else has. And I'm not saying there's anything wrong with makeup. I obviously use it. We just need to keep perspective about it. Makeup is not going to change the way God sees us or the way our families feel about us. So as the cosmetic industry reinforces the lie that we aren't good enough, we can see in the Bible over and over that God places value in our souls. In the Psalms, we can see that we are fearfully and wonderfully made. So let's read Psalm 139, verses 13 and 14. For you formed my inward parts. You wove me in my mother's womb. I will give thanks to you, for I am fearfully and wonderfully made. Wonderful are your works, and my soul knows it very well. So God has formed us since the beginning, which gives us value. We are wonderfully made. So we're going to get to the beauty verse in 1 Peter that we all know. But first, we're going to look at the context of that verse in 1 Peter. So if you want to turn over there. In chapter 1, verses 17 through 19, we see that we were ransomed or bought with the precious blood of Christ because God values us. So let's go ahead and read chapter 1, verse 17 through 19. If you address as Father the one who impartially judges according to each one's work, conduct yourselves in fear during the time of your stay on earth, knowing that you were not redeemed with perishable things like silver or gold from your futile way of life inherited from your forefathers, but with the precious blood, as of a lamb unblemished and spotless, the blood of Christ. The blood of Christ is more valuable than gold or silver, which means we are valued more than gold or silver by God, since he purchased us and sent Christ for our sake, as we see in verse 20. Then we move to chapter 2, verse 9. And we see that we're chosen. So let's read that. But you are a chosen race, a royal priesthood, a holy nation, a people for God's own possession, so that you may proclaim the excellencies of him who has called you out of darkness into his marvelous light. God has chosen us and set us apart to be his possession, which is another way we can see we're valued. Then we see in chapter 3, verses 3 and 4, that what makes us valuable is the hidden person of the heart. So let's read that. Your adornment must not be merely external, braiding the hair and wearing gold jewelry or putting on dresses, but let it be the hidden person of the heart with the imperishable quality of a gentle and quiet spirit, which is precious in the sight of God. Our value to God has nothing to do with our external appearance. It doesn't matter to him how we fix our hair or what clothes or jewelry we wear. What God considers precious is the hidden person of the heart that has the imperishable beauty of a gentle and quiet spirit. Now, if we drop back a few verses, we can see that Christ is given as our example of the gentle and quiet spirit that we are instructed to have. So back in chapter 2, verses 21 through 24, we'll read those. For you have been called for this purpose, since Christ also suffered for you, leaving you an example for you to follow in his steps, who committed no sin, nor was any deceit found in his mouth. And while being reviled, he did not revile in return while suffering. He uttered no threats. He kept entrusting himself to him who judges righteously. And he himself bore our sins in his body on the cross, so that we might die to sin and live to righteousness. For by his wounds you were healed. Christ was without humility or deceit, and didn't threaten in return those who threatened him. He lived his life with humility in all things, and we are called to also have that kind of humility. Humility towards others helps us achieve the gentle and quiet spirit that is precious to God. So I thought a lot about what to wear for today, but what if I had stopped there? What if I had thought only about the perfect thing to wear, but hadn't planned out what to say? I would be pretty embarrassed and even more red than I am, and it would be a waste of everyone's time. These verses are saying, if we are going to take the time on our appearance, we need to spend even more time and effort on our hearts to make them pleasing to God. And we'll talk more about this in the next point, too. But so for what reason do we have a gentle and quiet spirit? We want our spirit to be gentle and quiet so that we can persuade those without Christ to follow him. Drop back to verses 1 and 2, and you see that a wife can win their husband's heart to the Lord when they have the gentle and quiet spirit, and their husband sees their respect and conduct, their behavior. Words aren't needed. Others see the attitude of humility within us and want to be a part of it. All the relationship talk in 1 Peter is there to help us win hearts to God. So now let's think about the opposite of a gentle and quiet spirit. The opposite of a gentle and quiet spirit is one who's bold and brazen. We've all seen someone who looks beautiful, but then you see the way they treat people and you change your mind. Think of situations in a store or restaurant you've been in when someone without the gentle and quiet spirit feels they've been wronged in some way. They're loud about it, complaining and demanding a refund or better service or whatever they feel they're owed. You can see right away that their heart is not one like Christ, and you don't want to be around them. We are called to have a gentle and quiet spirit, so those around us are drawn to us and want to know what is about us that makes us so different. So we have the opportunity to teach them about Christ. But quiet in public and around others doesn't necessarily equate a gentle and quiet spirit. When we complain and speak negatively at home or in private, it can be just as much a problem as being brazen in public. In Proverbs, the quarrelsome wife is warned about in a couple of places. Proverbs 19:13 says, "A foolish son is ruin to his father, and a wife's quarreling is a continual dripping of rain." And Proverbs 27:15 says, "A continual dripping on a rainy day and a quarrelsome wife are alike." Now, I've had a lot of kids, mine and other people's kids, who fall asleep in my arms while holding a sippy cup, and they never seem to hold it upright when they're falling asleep. And as I've sat there, not wanting to move for fear of waking them up too soon, the sippy cup has dripped on my arm over and over. And it's a very annoying thing, and it's in those moments that I can see why waterboarding is used as an instrument in torture. We just want it to stop already. And we don't want to be that way to our husbands and families at home. We want them to want to be around us and not trying to escape us all the time. Having a gentle and quiet spirit, not a complaining and quarrelsome one, can help with that. So with all that in mind, we're now going to look at our focus, which should be on the inner self, The blog post article I read from brought out the point that Satan is trying to get us to focus on our insecurities and get our focus to shift away from being about the Lord's work. Now, we all understand that God is light and there's no darkness in him, which means we need to focus on that light. Matthew 6, 22 and 23 says, The eye is the lamp of the body. So if your eye is healthy, your whole body will be full of light. But if your eye is bad, your whole body will be full of darkness. If then the light is in you is darkness, how great is the darkness? Our vision, our focus, dictates if we are full of light or dark. If we focus on the lie that we're not good enough, then we will allow darkness to grow within us. When we focus on the truth from God, that we have value to him, we will let our light shine forth toward others to win them to Christ. So we focus on our inner self and how to renew it. Let's go to 2 Corinthians chapter 4, verse 16. And we'll read that together. It says, therefore, from now on, we recognize no one according to the flesh, even though we have known Christ. Wait, I'm in chapter 5. I think I've been married to Danny for too long. chapter 4. Therefore, we do not lose heart, but though our outer man is decaying, yet our inner man is being renewed day by day. We need inward renewal daily, or all the things going on around us will discourage and distract us. I don't know about you, but I woke up looking this way. Just kidding. I obviously took the time to shower and put on some makeup. And we do this each day as part of our routine. Although some days, with little ones or when we hit the snooze button a few too many times, it may just be splashing water on our faces and some dry shampoo instead of the shower. But still, we try to freshen up a little. So our inner self, our hearts, need just as much care and attention day by day as our bodies do to keep the darkness away and our focus on the light. Our renewal comes from Jesus. So if we look back at verse 10, and it says, always carrying about in the body the dying of Jesus, so that the life of Jesus may also be manifested in our body. We carry Jesus and our hope in him with us always, which gives us renewal of the Spirit. We find renewal in Christ when we're joined with him in baptism. We adorn our hearts with Christ when we're baptized with him, as it says in Galatians 3:27, for as many of you as were baptized into Christ have put on Christ. So once we adorn ourselves with Christ, our focus should be on the eternal things, not the momentary fleeting things of this life. We need to be like Mary, who focused on the eternal things, the teachings in Christ, instead of like Martha, who worried about the physical, temporal things. So back to the context of our 2 Corinthians 4:16 verse of renewal, the Corinthians had persecutions and situations that could easily distract them from their purpose of showing Jesus in their lives. When you look at verses 8 and 9, you see they were afflicted, perplexed, persecuted, and struck down. Verse 17 refers to their light momentary affliction. Their outward affliction was the persecution of Christians. The outward affliction was being used to try to dishearten the inner self and take them away from their focus on Christ. But they kept their focus on Christ in spite of all that and knew that the purpose was to show Jesus in their lives. The end of verse 11 states that the life of Jesus also may be manifested in our mortal flesh. Their focus was on the eternal, and they knew the momentary affliction was just that, momentary. And it was all to help show others Christ working in them. Beauty is a temporal, fleeting thing. When we focus more on how we look than on our heart and adorning it with Christ to become more like him, we're focusing on the wrong thing. Verse 18 is a reminder to focus on the renewing of our inner self, which is the eternal thing. It says at the end, for the things that are seen are transient, but the things that are unseen are eternal. Now, when we stop looking in the mirror and focusing on fleeting beauty, we can then start looking to others to help renew them. When we focus on the light, we want to share it with others. Jesus is our example in everything, including the kind of inward beauty we want to have. So let's go to Hebrews 12, verse 2, and we'll read that. If fixing our eyes on Jesus, the author and perfecter of faith, who, for the joy set before him, endured the cross, despising the shame, and has sat down at the right hand of the throne of God. Jesus went to the cross and saw it as a joy. The strength of inward beauty is taking joy in serving others for their spiritual good. The Proverbs 31 woman was also selfless in her service and showed her inward beauty by serving others. We can show our inward beauty in the same way by serving others and taking joy in it. Jesus showed actions of compassion and kindness when we didn't deserve it but really wanted it. Inward beauty shows compassion and kindness instead of standing in judgment of others. Jesus showed actions of forgiveness when we didn't know what we were doing. On the cross, he said, "Forgive them, for they know not what they do." Inward beauty acts in forgiving ways toward those who need it but don't realize it. Jesus showed actions of patience to those who didn't understand his purpose often. Inward beauty shows patience when we wait for others and understand that it takes time for people to change. Now, at home, we just finished a ladies' class where we learned the sign language for the fruit of the Spirit. So the sign for patience is this. The sign can help us to remember that sometimes we need to wait on others and not rush to judgment and rebuke. Sometimes we just need to keep our mouths shut while waiting for others to understand what God is teaching us. And Jesus showed actions of self-control when he did not revile in return when others were hurting him. Inward beauty serves others in restraint when others say or do things to our hurt. We return good words and actions for the evil and hurtful ones like Jesus. And Jesus showed actions of daily encouragement to others. We can also encourage one another daily. That's part of what today is about, is encouraging each other to grow in biblical inward beauty. Inward beauty comes from a heart that wants to follow Jesus in his example of humility and service to others. As Proverbs 4:23 teaches us to guard our hearts, for from it flow the springs of life. Let our desire and prayer be like David's in Psalm 51:10, to create in me a clean heart, O God, and renew a right spirit within me. Let us find our renewal in Jesus and his sacrifice daily.